case, Bausch against Stryker Corporation. Mr. Weisberg.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Josh Weisberg on behalf of Plaintiff Margaret Bausch. The District Court dismissed Ms. Bausch's complaint with prejudice and without leave to amend. We request this Court reverse because the District Court's ruling conflicts with binding precedent. The Supreme Court and Seventh Circuit have consistently explained that in medical device cases, a plaintiff may bring a parallel claim under state tort law based on a defendant's violation of federal law. That is considered a parallel claim, and it is not preempted. But the District Court judge in this case held that Bausch's claims are preempted because negligence and strict liability claims, quote, by their very nature, are incompatible with federal law. That is an extreme view that is legally wrong and has been criticized by other district court judges. For example, Judge Carlton of the Eastern District of California explained that the court's interpretation of parallel claims in Bausch is the most restrictive approach any court has taken, and it cannot be squared with the Supreme Court's decision in Medtronic v. Lohr. Under the district court's view, after the FDA gives pre-market approval to market a device, a manufacturer is essentially immune from tort liability even if the device is manufactured out of compliance with FDA regulations. The district court based its interpretation of parallel claims on the Supreme Court's decision in Regal v. Medtronic, but that is not what Regal held.
Is it your argument that there was a manufacturing defect in this device?
Yes.
That is, that the device was not manufactured in accord with the FDA's manufacturing requirements?
Correct. The district court judge in this case based his decision on Regal. And in Regal, a plaintiff was trying to hold a manufacturer liable under state law.
Any other set of FDA requirements that you believe was violated?
Well, we believe that they violated the PMA for this device, and we believe that they violated
what?
The pre-market authorization.
To use real English words, the field-specific jargon is lost on generalist judges. So what is the thing, in addition to a manufacturing defect that you believe, what rule has been violated?
We believe that they violated federal law by manufacturing a device in deviation of their pre-market authorization.
Can you be concrete? In what respect was there a violation of the requirements for this device?
The requirements for this device required that it be manufactured with no deviation from the specifications that the FDA approved. And we allege that they deviated from those specifications. We also allege...
In what respect? Could you be concrete, please?
Your Honor, we believe that the Trident Hemispherical Acetabular Shell, bearing catalog number 502-01-54E, was not in compliance with...
Yes, not in compliance in what way? Well, in what way did it not comply?
To answer that question, Your Honor, they recalled this device. They know why they recalled it. A recall means it's...
Look, you're the plaintiff. You must have a theory of the way in which the device didn't comply with the federal requirements or was not manufactured in accordance with the requirements. You've got to have some theory. If you don't, you just violated Rule 11 by filing this complaint. So I would like to know what your theory is.
Okay. Our theory is that they violated the current good manufacturing practices. We have a number of them set forth in our amended complaint that the FDA identified as they inspected that plant and said that this Trident system has been manufactured in violation of each of those, and it is adulterated.
I'm really asking you to be concrete, and it sounds like you don't have anything.
Well,
this may have been your problem in the district court. The district judge really was saying, tell me what you think the problem is, and all he got was generalities. And he then inferred from the fact that all he was getting was generalities that you must be relying on some state law duty extrinsic to federal law. And that's the real problem. Is there anything concrete you can point to that said the federal government required them to use procedure X in manufacturing this? They used procedure Y, and that injured my client in the following way.
I can point to two different things. The what they've told us in their urgent product recall is that they manufactured this out of compliance with specifications. The PMA, the requirements of the federal scheme specifically say you can't do that. Now, you want to know what the specific manufacturing violation was. The FDA found a number of them at the Cork, Ireland facility where this was produced, and those are set forth in detail in the amended complaint.
Now, Mr. Weisberg, let me just ask you, do you have access to the pre-market approval documents?
No.
Those are confidential as a matter of law, correct?
Correct.
Do you have access to the defendant's manufacturing records applicable to the device that was implanted in your client?
No.
Can you get that without discovery?
No.
You know that did the FDA or did the product recall identify what the specific defects were?
No.
Okay. If I understand this correctly, your complaint is based on, look, we've got good reason to expect to think that this device was defective. We don't yet know exactly what one or different requirements were violated to cause that defect, but we've got good reason to think it was defective.
That's correct, and it would be impossible to know that without discovery. And this case is very much distinguishable from the Eighth Circuit's recent decision in Medtronic, Inc., where the Eighth Circuit made a big deal out of the fact that the district court judge had offered the plaintiff steering committee the opportunity to conduct discovery before deciding the preemption issue, and the district court judge even felt that it was probably necessary, and the plaintiffs declined to do that, and that was featured in why the manufacturing defect dismissed and affirmed. In our case, the defendants moved to stay discovery pending the results of their motion to dismiss. We contested that motion because we knew we could not get any more specific than what they put in the public record without discovery. If we're going to be held to that standard, it's an impossible standard to meet in this case. And I would say that it's not required by Twombly because Twombly says, quote, asking for plausible grounds simply calls for enough fact to raise a reasonable expectation that discovery will reveal evidence to support a claim. And in our case, we have pleaded enough fact to reveal that evidence. We've pleaded that they recalled it, which by definition means it was in violation of federal law, as considered by the FDA. We've pleaded that the FDA had found that the Trident system manufactured at the facility where the plaintiffs was from was adulterated, and we've pleaded the specific component that hers is in the affected lot. So I believe that we've met those standards.
Mr. Weisberg, the device that was implanted in your client was removed as part of the revision surgery, is that right?
That is right.
Who has it now?
I believe that the treating doctor has it, but I'm not.
Has anybody inspected it or tested it?
Not to my knowledge.
I sure hope somebody knows where it is. So,
right.
If this case goes forward.
Well, what I can tell you, Your Honor, if this case goes forward, is that the treating doctor, hypothetically speaking, I guess, would be testifying that this is the reason that this product failed. And he would be providing expert testimony as to Chief Judge Easterbrook's question as to exactly how it failed.
That's something I guess... Maybe it's an obvious question. Maybe it can't be answered. But it would seem that was it actually replaced or just adjusted?
No, it was replaced. It was removed because it failed.
Some other product, some other manufacturer or something?
I would have to.
You don't know?
I can't recall exactly what they put back in there. I don't believe it was a Trident system because.
Wouldn't you put in the same one that's been recalled?
No, they did not put in the same one that was recalled. Absolutely.
And that's why I'm wondering when Registry was asking what specifically was wrong. I wonder if the physician pulls it out and says, oh, no wonder, or something like that.
Right.
I wonder if it would be wrong for you to say that.
If
you say whatever he said, yeah, this was, I happen to have a secretary that has four joint replacements.
Yeah.
And a revision. But I don't understand the details when you look at something that you could see a defect, like maybe with this, where the ball fits in the cup and whatever, it's got the wrong kind of lubricant or something.
I mean, I agree that's a subject of expert testimony by the treating doctor, which
she,
we fully expect
he,
to.
He didn't tell her.
No, he did not tell her.
I assume that you've got to worry about potential arguments about spoliation of evidence if you were to unilaterally go forward and test the device.
Correct. Now, we've talked a lot about plausibility, but I really do think that the essence of the district court's decision and the reason why it's so important that you clarify what his mistake was because he misinterpreted parallel claims under Regal. And that was really what his decision was based on. He threw in the alternative, Ms. Bausch doesn't plead enough. But really, he spends almost his entire time in the opinions talking about the fact that strict liability and negligence claims are different from or in addition to federal requirements, which that is just not consistent with what Regal said. It's not consistent with Medtronic v. Lohr. It's not consistent with what this court held.
It sounds actually that what the district judge was saying was that he wanted you to file a complaint that had more different counts. And it would go count one, violation of the pre-marketing approval document. Count two, manufacturing defect. Count three, right, that every separate legal theory had to be in a separate count. And if you put one bad legal theory in, otherwise, the whole complaint is doomed. Right? Is that a fair understanding of what the district judge said?
I don't think so. I mean, I think if he had said that and given us leave to do it, which we asked for, we would have been happy to plead it more artfully however
exactly
he wanted.
The district judge, seemed to me, was asking for in the first opinion, and then you tender a proposed amended complaint that, as the district judge saw it, had exactly the same problem.
Well, let me just quote the district court on a couple things, okay? And let me also point out that we challenged him in our post-judgment briefs to explain under his definition of parallel claims how someone could ever make one. And he acknowledges that invitation on the last page of his opinion on August 31st of 2009, and he declines the invitation.
There is a federal rule against advisory opinions. It's not a federal judge's job to tell a lawyer how to be a good lawyer.
Fair enough, Your Honor.
Allowed.
Right, Your Honor. We weren't asking him to tell us how to be good lawyers, but what he does say in his opinion, and I'm quoting now from the first one, he says, even if, this is on page 12 to 13, even if a negligence claim was premised on conduct that also violated the FDA and thus would not impose a requirement on manufacturers that would be in addition to federal regulations, such a requirement would still be different and preempted under the clear language of the NDA. Now, what he's saying is you can't bring a negligence claim under Illinois law because the elements are different than the FDCA. But, and that's the exact same extreme position Helmedica pitched to the court in Hoff's, was pointed out in the Hoff's opinion, would basically be a grant of civil immunity. In this case, the judge expressly says in his opinion that he finds it persuasive, what Helmedica is saying, and that he is buying it hook, line, and sinker, and he is kicking out these claims because they're negligence and strict liability claims under Illinois law that, by their very nature, conflict with federal requirements. I'm going to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor, Counsel. Robert Connolly on behalf of the defendants. This case involves the application of the Regal decision to a FDA-approved device and the application of the preemption provisions of the FDA. As explained by the Supreme Court in Regal, the FDA spends an average of 1,200 hours evaluating and comparing the safety and risks of these type of devices.
Well, Mr. Connolly, Mr. Weisberg said on his feet here that he wants to argue that this device was defective because it was not manufactured in compliance with the pre-marketing approval and because it was not manufactured in compliance with the FDA's manufacturing requirements. That is, there was a manufacturing defect. And those are the two theories that the Supreme Court has said are tenable. So how could this complaint be dismissed under 12b-6?
He has not identified what the manufacturing defect
is. That's the problem I was exploring with him. This is maddeningly vague.
He
said, in response to Judge Hamilton's question, that it's extremely hard to do that since pre-marketing approval documents aren't public. The FDA didn't say precisely what the reason for the recall was, and he hasn't had a chance for discovery. And it's not the function of 12b-6 to knock out claims that need discovery before you've got a chance for it.
Well, first of all, the recall was a voluntary recall by the manufacturer. It's posted on the FDA website, the reasons for it.
Look, I'm not asking you to say whether you're justifying the recall or whether it shows anything in particular. The burden of this is the plaintiff says he wants to make the kind of claim that is allowed by the Supreme Court. So how do we knock that out under Rule 12b-6 before he has a chance to get through discovery evidence that may be essential to proving that claim?
Well,
why is this a 12b-6 problem?
It's important to realize that the plaintiff has two components that he has to plead in his complaint. One component is what is wrong with the product, and the second component is did that problem cause his client harm? With respect to the second component, the causation component, the plaintiff has unfettered access to her surgeons, her physicians, to be able to plead appropriately whether or not this particular device caused her harm. Those pleadings, the complaint and the amended complaint for that matter, did not appropriately plead.
Wait, I'm totally lost here. If the device wasn't causing your plaintiff harm, it wouldn't have been removed. I mean, surgery, hip replacement surgery is bad enough to do it once. It's extraordinarily bad to do it twice. The question is not whether the device caused harm, one might think, at least at the pleading stage. It's whether that harm was caused by noncompliance with federal rules.
Well, there are multiple reasons why devices are removed, Your Honor, not just because there was some problem with the device. But in any event, this complaint did not plead what the problem was or how that problem caused harm.
Let me ask you, let's get away from medical device claims and think more generally about pleading in product liability cases. I thought it was pretty common for a plaintiff, let's suppose it's an airbag that didn't inflate in a collision. The plaintiff may not be sure whether that was a design defect or a manufacturing defect and can plead in the alternative, can't he?
Yes.
Well, what's wrong here with saying, in essence, in the alternative, there's a whole bunch of requirements that your client was supposed to comply with. I know the FDA concluded that there was a problem with these devices. I don't know exactly which ones of these were ultimately violated until I can get discovery, but I sure have reason to be suspicious. What's wrong with that?
Well, if you look at what was pled in the amended complaint here, which is taken from the FDA's 483 letter, which sets out what the FDA thinks was wrong here. It is not a manufacturing defect. It is a systemic post-manufacturing quality review process. They identify four things.
The processes that were supposed to be in place to prevent manufacturing defects were in some ways inadequate. Is that right?
That is what is set out in the FDA.
Because we assume that in a manufacturing process, there will occasionally be problems, right?
Yes.
And manufacturers, as the FDA's requirements set forth, have to have procedures in place to test and to deal with non-complying product and so forth, right?
Right.
So It probably, if something does slip through that's out of tolerance or has the wrong materials or something, it's probably the result of multiple errors, right? That is an original error in the process itself, and then a failure in the quality control checks that are designed to prevent that from getting through, right? Now, without discovery, how is a plaintiff supposed to figure out which of those was the problem?
Well, the point here is the FDA is not saying that there was a manufacturing defect. They are just saying that you can improve your post-manufacturing processes.
Well, they're not saying you can't improve. They're saying your products were adulterated and in violation of federal law, correct?
They were saying that the process was adulterated.
And therefore the products produced under them were adulterated in violation of federal law, correct?
I am not sure I'd go that far, Your Honor. I think
why not?
It's just that the processes...
I understand you might hesitate, but why?
No. Because I think what the FDA was saying was that the post-manufacturing processes needed improvement. The quality control processes after manufacture needed improvement.
Why a process needs improvement is to reduce the number of times it misfires.
Reduce the possibility there would be misfires. But there's no evidence there were any misfires. That's the point.
Look, we're not at the stage of evidence. This is not only not a trial, it isn't even a motion for summary judgment. This complaint was dismissed under 12b-6 for failure to state a claim on which relief can be granted. And the ground that you persuaded the district court to adopt was not that it failed to state a claim under Iqbal. It was that it stated a claim, and the claim is preempted. Right? The argument you're now making has nothing to do with preemption. It's an Iqbal argument. But it's completely different from the one the district court accepted.
Here, the FDA has not engaged in any enforcement action or advised Stryker that any product it specifically manufactured was in fact defective. It simply said you need to improve your quality control processes at the end of the manufacturing process. This plaintiff has failed under both the complaint and the amended complaint to allege what is wrong with the product and how whatever was wrong with the product caused harm.
It sounds like you're then agreeing that the district court's analysis here was incorrect insofar as it barred common law claims based on manufacturing defects premised on violations of federal law.
I think under the circumstances of this case and the allegations present in the complaint, the district court got it right. You cannot
I'm
go
not
beyond...
Talking, I'm not talking about the result, which
yes.
I know you like. I'm talking about the reasoning that was quoted that even if a negligence claim was premised on conduct that also violated the FDA and presumably laws and regulations, and thus would not impose a requirement on manufacturers, that would be in addition to federal regulations, such a requirement would still be different and preempted under the clear language of the MDA. Do you agree with that or not?
I agree with that.
How can you in light of lore?
Well, I think that when Congress enacted the medical device amendments, it intended to create only a very, very narrow opportunity for any sort of claim. Since then, other circuit courts wrestling with this have found and have applied a slightly different standard and have permitted the kind of case we're talking about now, which is where there has been a plea of a specific manufacturing defect. And those are the two cases we've recently cited to the court, the House decision and the Medtronic decision.
You're shifting back to the Iqbal problem. Let's talk about the substantive preemption problem. Is it your contention that a negligence claim premised on conduct that violated FDA laws, regulations, and requirements is preempted?
Yes.
So that this grant of protection for compliance with federal law in essence amounts to immunity for violating federal law. Is that right?
It is left to the FDA to enforce violations of the manufacturing processes.
And how do you reconcile that with the language in lore that left open the possibility of state law claims based upon violations of federal law.
What I look to is the language in Regal that talks about parallel claims without defining those. And in Regal, there is the possibility for parallel claims, potentially for violations of federal law, but it did not define that.
Okay, let's go to some examples then. We've had this discussion before. Let's suppose you've got your factory manager decides to substitute inferior metals or ceramic products so that the products are out of compliance with the assurances that your client gave the FDA to secure the pre-market approval, and that the use of those inferior materials causes the device to fail. Is it your contention that a manufacturing defect claim under state law based upon those violations of the pre-market approval requirements is preempted?
As I understand Regal, I think it is preempted.
Why on earth would Congress have adopted that sort of rule to protect violations of federal law?
Because I think as the Supreme Court interpreted it, they wanted the FDA and not individual juries to evaluate and assess whether the processes are appropriate and whether given products are manufactured
appropriately. That's why the standard of proof is so high. You have to prove a violation of the FDA's requirements. Do you think Regal overruled without saying so what Justice Stevens wrote for the court in Lohr, that nothing in Section 360K denies Florida the right to provide a traditional damages remedy for violations of common law duties when those duties parallel federal requirements? And then went on to explain, while there may be some additional elements you have to prove for your negligence claim, those actually narrow the claim, they don't broaden it.
I do not know whether or not the Supreme Court intended to or in fact did overrule Lohr. I just know that under Regal they have set a very, very high bar to for a plaintiff to establish and plead a product liability claim.
So if your rogue manager decides to start substituting inferior equipment, the people who are hurt by that are left with no remedy.
The FDA,
that's your position.
The FDA has enforcement powers.
Can it order your client to pay money that then goes in the pockets of those individuals?
No.
So you interpret 360K as saying, if you violate federal law and cause harm to people, federal law prevents any compensation.
Yes.
Okay.
And I understand we disagree about that, but even under the
comment about the Sixth Circuit's opinion in Howard.
Yes. They seem to impose a number of caveats in that case. As I read the decision, they made it without they said it not to be published. They said that they were struggling with the interpretation of that particular provision, and acknowledged that the dissent had some very good points about the way it read the grammar of that particular provision. But at the end of the day, they found a very specific regulation that had been violated, not leaving oil on a certain product. And as a result,
however, that the Howard decision is not consistent with your view of the Supreme Court's Regal decision.
Correct. I think they allowed for the argument we're talking about now, which is that
same thing about Judge Malloy's opinion in the Eighth Circuit case.
Correct. You're absolutely right about that, Your Honor. Again, though, both cases were addressing very specific claims of a specific defect.
In the Howard case after discovery,
but in the Medtronic case, the Eighth Circuit case, it was on a motion to dismiss as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Weisberg?
Your Honor, other than asking the court to reverse and remand with instructions to allow Ms. Bausch
to pursue her claim in discovery. Unless the court has any questions, I have nothing else to say.
There is none. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under